in Mandarin, penguin literally translates to business goose.
Business yes. goose. Yeah, that's a good one. That's like a good one.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction with your favorite quadsome.
Quadsome?
I don't know. Foursome?
Kwanzaa?
I just wanted to make it sound less gay. David Rand, Kyle Mack, Bennett on the buttons. My name's Joe Sheehan. Welcome back. David, what are we talking about today?
Bernie Sanders is looking at buying a third home. So he's selling a book.
How many homes do you need?
I thought he hated capitalism, though.
Yeah, not for him. Capitalism is bad.
Why doesn't he live in a cardboard box in the streets of, where's he from?
Vermont.
Connecticut?
Vermont.
Thank you. Yeah. Why doesn't he live in a cardboard box on the streets of Vermont?
Because he's a senator, a U.S. senator, and he sells books, and people buy his books, strangely.
He's just a book salesman.
Yeah, he's a book salesman who occasionally takes votes to destroy the country.
I mean, all these politicians, they're just taxpayer-funded, like, social media influencers selling books, right?
True.
That's all they are.
Bernie
the
has
new definition
to,
of politician.
We dress it up, we put them in suits and put them in the holy site, but, like, that's all they are, actually.
They gotta go to the wall, gotta do all the things, and the next thing you know, they're selling a book.
Remember, like
they're business geese.
In the concept,
business geese.
Okay, we have to explain that.
Nope, that's going to be the cold open, so we don't need to explain that.
me talking about business geese. Okay, in the kind of the conversation of like, how many homes do you need? Do you remember back in the 2016 election when that was like the famous clip of he was in an interview and just like, how many, you go to the grocery store and there's all these deodorants. How many deodorants do you need?
That's a pretty good Bernie impression.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We had to listen to him for a decade.
We still are, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to be doing it today. He was on the Tim Dillon podcast where he got a pretty friendly interview. And I think we're going to bring a little bit of little criticism to him, a little bit of commentary on Bernie Sanders' new talking points and his perspective on a couple different issues. So dive right into it.
Do it.
All right. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Dillon Show. The book is Fight Oligarchy, Bernie Sanders. It is out everywhere. You can get it on Amazon.com. You can go to a local bookstore, which is always a good idea. Support a local bookstore. And I'm sure the author of this book will appreciate that. Bernie Sanders, Senator, thank you for coming.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate it. This book, when you walked in, we talked about, it is not big, but it is something that you've been talking about for many, many years. What is the importance of writing this now? Because you just got off a tour with the same name about fighting oligarchy.
I think, Tim, this is kind of an unprecedented moment in American history. And I think what the book touches on are issues that the media in general, my colleagues in Congress, are not very comfortable dealing with. And that is power and wealth. Who owns the country? How's that? Pretty simple question.
Yeah.
Who really has the power? And what we are looking at right now is a moment in history where we have more income and wealth inequality than we've ever had. And I think what the American people have got to decide is whether they are comfortable with a situation in which one person, Mr. Musk, owns more wealth than the bottom 52% of American households. Is that really what America is supposed to be about? Top 1% owns more wealth than the bottom 93%. And while the very...
Can I make an executive motion to increase the speed of the play of this
yes.
video?
Oh, yes, yes. I was going to recommend it.
God, he speaks so fucking slow.
Put it at like 1.5 or
put
something.
Put it at 2.
I listened to Sean Ryan at regular speed for the first time ever, like the other day.
That's
and I was
very
like,
slow.
Oh my God.
All right, so the book royalty on his books will make him approximately 7.5 to 10% of the list price. It's a pretty good profit margin.
Yeah, that's right, great.
That's really great
royalty. I mean, yeah. I don't know what's customary in books, but...
That's
seems
pretty
good.
Pretty average. Let's see here. It's Crown Publishing book with an imprint of Penguin Random House, one of the largest corporate book printers in the world.
Business geese.
Business geese, exactly.
The fact that this has come out 3 times now is kind of weird.
Look, penguins are everywhere, man. I've been trying to tell you guys this for years. I mean, he looks kind of like a penguin.
It's old,
decrepit penguin.
Yeah.
It's
kind
of got the whole vibe to it.
Yeah. But my point being, he didn't go to some small publisher. He's definitely sharing profits with the largest corporations in publishing.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting decision. Quite. Strange that he would do so. Maybe he wants the distribution rights.
Oh.
And the incumbent opportunities that come with that.
Ooh.
Maybe he wants that third house. I thought he already had three houses.
No, he's got two. I looked it up right beforehand.
I swear.
He's got, yeah, he's got a lake house and a normal house, I think.
Wait, no, it's a nice joint. It's like a colonial.
Oh, well.
Yeah, four bedrooms. He's an old guy. You know, does he need four bedrooms?
So he was
probably get away with like a Rambler, you know, single stories.
He's not living in a Volkswagen Beetle. Like, that's what I really feel like his vibe is overall.
He is the human embodiment of a Volkswagen Beetle.
I feel like he used to be that vibe. I feel like he probably used to be that vibe, and then like he started getting more popularity, became a senator, got all this money, and he kept saying the same things he's always been saying. He was like, man, it's kind of nice over here.
People just keep giving me money to say this.
Working.
This is working. Yeah, because like the whole Fight Oligarchy tour that he was on, right? He did that with AOC, and they went to all these venues.
Flew on private jets.
Did they fly on private jets?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
Oh, that was a big point of consternation for a lot of people.
What was their justification?
Well, they have to be able to get there. I mean,
can't have like the plebs.
Have you seen the state of commercial air travel these days? Everything's getting canceled and delayed, and we can't even pay air traffic controllers. The government's shut down. How are you going to get to this very important tour to fight the oligarchy if you don't get there on time?
That's a good
Unless
point.
You use the oligarchy.
If you can't beat them, join them, I think.
Does he have a private jet?
No.
They might have chartered one.
They probably chartered one.
Yeah.
No, it was just like, it was one of those things where I was like all of a sudden wondering. I was like, I wonder if he's gotten to the point where he has a private jet yet. Because like, how many houses do you need? You got to get a private jet.
I don't think he's that rich.
How do you go from each of your houses?
But like, he's definitely in the 1% he just mentioned. Like, let's just put it that way.
What's the net wealth of Bernie Sanders?
I want to say it's like 20 million. What do you guess?
I was going to say like 12.
Million?
Yeah.
12 million? I was going to go a little higher.
I have a feeling the number is going to be like lower than
you think. It's probably like 10. What do you think, Bennett?
I was going to go like in the 20s.
We're overshooting, 20, right?
25.
Price is right, 50.
$1, Bob.
I'm going for 50. Well, it's still thinking. Grok is thinking. Think Grok. Yeah. 3 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we're overshooting.
Yeah, but remember,
the only reason I went 12 is because you went 20, and I was like, oh, maybe I should go higher than I think it was. Like, I was going to say 5.
Just keep in mind, it wasn't too long ago he was saying, the millionaires, you know, like, that's where he was going with it. And now it's billionaires.
Right.
Well, that's kind of the joke.
Pretty soon it'll be trillionaires.
That's kind of
the rate of inflation.
That's kind of the joke is, well, Elon's getting close. That's kind of the joke is, like, after the 2016 election, he wrote a book literally on how it's wrong to make $1 million. And then he made $1 million off of that book specifically. Like, that's the craziness.
He didn't donate the rest of the federal government?
No, of course not.
Why not? You know, you can donate to pay down the national debt. He should have done that.
Can do that.
You can.
That option is always open. Nobody seems to take
it. It's legitimately a thing. I'm sure you guys knew about
that. The only one donating money right now to the federal government is Trump with all these White House renovations.
Awkward. He should do a book about it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Trump made the one book, and I don't think he needs any more books. He doesn't care.
That's true.
He's like, the margins aren't that great.
He's like, I don't love writing. Writing is not my favorite thing. I know a few words. I know the best words, but I don't like writing.
Okay. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
I was about to say it, and you did it. Well done, sir.
That is my favorite.
In America, becoming phenomenally richer. 60% of our people are living paycheck to paycheck.
It's a huge problem, and I think that most Americans would hear those numbers and think that there's a big problem, where you have one person controlling more wealth than 52% of the country, which is probably around 150 million people, maybe more. And that also is a huge problem for democracy. There's a huge problem for democracy. Trump, Kamala Harris, anybody in my lifetime that has been, outside of yourself, that has been a contender for the presidency from a major political party is backed usually by the same groups of people. They're very wealthy lobbyists, donors. The donor class is incredibly powerful. The landmark Supreme Court decision to regard political donations as speech,
right? Citizens United.
Citizens United, thank you. The name escaped me. I can donate as much money as I want to a candidate, and it's considered speech.
That's right.
That's false. That's not what Citizens United says. It's not even close. It's like, it's so far away from what Citizens United says, it's profound.
Pause. Can I make an executive motion for David to take the speed down to about 0.5.
Oh, sure.
No, for yourself.
Oh, myself. Oh, sorry.
You're talking as fast as they're talking. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I just matched the vibe, guys. So that's
what does Citizens United say?
Citizens United says that if you are a person, you have a free speech right. But if you work with other people to speak together, you retain that right because groups of people have the same rights that the individual people within that group have. That's what it says.
Okay.
So you don't lose your rights the minute you work with other people to speak.
Sure.
So if you group money together and create a documentary to criticize Hillary Clinton during an election year, that's not electioneering. Mm-hmm. That's just criticism of Hillary Clinton.
Sure. Okay.
That's what Citizens United was about. Citizens United is a production company, a video production company that made a documentary Hillary Clinton didn't like, so she sued them. And that's what decided that. So...
Yeah, Citizens United is more about like the privacy of you donating money to organizations like nonprofits and stuff like
no,
that.
No, it's not really about privacy. No, it's about the organization's right to be able to speak. So what you're thinking is NCAA versus Alabama, which is about donor privacy. But Citizens United was, I mean, and
they get
the implication,
lumped in together with like, because they all kind of handle the same type of thing, mm-hmm. like organizations speaking and then donating to organizations to speak.
That's true. Those are related cases. And NCAA versus Alabama was mentioned in Citizens United as a foundational privacy principle that didn't go away the minute you worked together to fund the NCAA in Alabama, Jim Crow South. That's what that case was about.
Gotcha.
Where Alabama wanted to know the donors to the NCAA so that they could do what?
Boycott them?
Yeah, and bring them out in public, maybe lynch them. You know, like this is Jim Crow South, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only wrong in terms of what it did, what it was about. It's also wrong in terms of you can't donate an unlimited amount of money to a candidate. That's not true. Federal candidates have donation limits. Bernie right. Sanders cannot accept unlimited money from anybody. So when he's taking a number for taking $963,000 from Alphabet Inc., that's not counting his direct fund, right? That's counting a donation to him and a donation to the Democrat Party that is then like used from the Democrats to spend on his behalf. But those are donation limited. To that amount, $2,500, I want to say.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Per person. So you and your spouse can get together and you can spend $5,000, but that's it. What it really was about is it created the super PAC, a 527 super PAC, which was the IRS designation for corporations who wanted to speak about things that are happening in politics. That's what Citizens United did. It allowed super PACs and C4s, you know, social welfare organizations to speak. So many of the social welfare organizations who speak on his behalf, Bernie Sanders, all benefited from that. It protects their rights to be able to gather money from people who want to support their cause and then speak. So that's, and it's not even that I like what it was, what created out of this, like all of this negative ads and all that. I don't even like any of that stuff. That's bad. Okay, fine. It's not a good social outcome, but that's not what it was about.
So it's just factually wrong is what you're saying.
Factually like they're, wrong they're, and philosophically wrong.
Yeah.
Sorry, I jumped on top.
No, that's good. I was just clarifying.
Yeah, so when the University of California gives him $900,000 or Amazon.com gives him $781,000, what we're talking about when we look at those numbers are not just him. It's two PACs, right, that are not coordinated with him, that are set up in benefit of him, sure, or two super PACs. Apple Inc., U.S. Postal Service, the U.S. Postal Service, your tax dollars gave him $438,000.
This pisses me off so bad. Because how much did they give him?
$438,000.
There's literally a line out the door at our post office here in Bozeman. There's one person at the counter ever, ever. And they've given a presidential candidate nearly $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
That enrages me.
I didn't even know they...
Defund the post office.
Yeah.
I want a t-shirt that says that, and I want to wear it every time I have to go to that godforsaken hellhole.
Another interesting change for Bernie Sanders, he used to talk about Bill Gates all the time as his like evil corporation that or evil rich person.
It's all
shifted
to Elon now.
Now it's all Elon, right? And obviously that's political, you know,
because Elon's on the right.
Yeah. As soon as Elon made the endorsement, like the day after Trump got like shot, as soon as that happened, it was all of a sudden just like, well, flip switch. Well, actually, no. I guess it actually came before that. It was the Twitter buying. That's when like the guns were out for Elon mm-hmm. at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Allowing the right to speak is the great crime. But I mean, Note that it was that, and then now he received $430,000 from Microsoft Corporation.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Amazing how the dollars get you to change your tune on things. So,
well, I don't even know
when you're
that.
Such an ardent, principled socialist like Bernie Sanders.
That's so strange. And it is strange, like how Tim kind of, you know, blows him up a little bit there in the beginning, like, you know, really, really stroking the ego. Obviously, being a good host, I can see that too. But it's true for a lot of these podcasters on this kind of that did like Trump and now like, you know, and like Bernie Sanders, Joe Rogan to him to, I think when he was on the Flagrant podcast, they kind of had a similar vibe.
A lot of them were Bernie, like, Bernie bros back in the day.
Yeah, right. Most of them. A lot of these are very, like, you're one of the few authentic ones. And I just can't see it.
No.
To me, he's like he embodies that guy that you knew in college that was really all about hating the rich, right? And not really that much about doing anything for the poor.
Right.
Oh, yeah, the old Orwell thing.
Yeah, the Road to Wigan Pier phenomena. He like embodies that to me, and it's so gross. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, that's how I take him. I mean, he seems like a nice fella. I would be happy to have a beer with him. But, like, it's something about that is, like, a character flaw that I really dislike.
I wouldn't. It would just all be, like, weird and, like, resent-y all the time. He is that vibe where he's just, like, he's that super complainy guy that you're just, like, ugh, I just can't deal with your, like, whiny resentment all the time. Ugh. He's, like, that type of guy.
Why are you so fucking negative all the time?
Yeah, it's like that.
You also can't speed him up in real life.
Well, that would be a nice feature that we should get figured out in the future, is like on phone calls and Zoom calls, being able to speed the person up that you're talking to.
I think Neuralink will solve that.
Neuralink will solve that. I had another thought, but I lost it.
Well, I got another donor for you that you're going to be really excited about. Kaiser Permanente.
Oh,
$313,000.
Conglomerate.
Yeah.
How much?
$313,000. Well, also, so why would someone who wants universal healthcare get a donation from one of the larger healthcare hospital chains?
I don't know.
Rent seeking, of course.
of course.
One thought, I remembered my thought. It was going on your authenticity thing. I think some of it is some people saying that he's authentic, but I think the other end of it is Bernie is very clearly not in like the same faction. Like, he is kind of a lone wolf in a lot of ways. Like, he works with people and stuff like that, but he is kind of this lone wolf in amongst the Democrats. And we saw that in the elections of how they all like knives out for him and kind of coordinated to make sure that he didn't rise and that he lost out on Super Tuesday based on like who dropped out and who stayed in on Super Tuesday. And then right after Super Tuesday, Elizabeth Warren goes and endorses Biden and is like, Bernie is a sexist, you know, like all that stuff. Like, I think that's one of those things where in the same way where like kind of Tea Partiers and libertarians and kind of the right wing sphere, they look at their party and they kind of know like that's the establishment. There's just a vibe. I don't like him. I'm against that vibe. I think that's what there's like these people where you like, you just know, you're like, you're a bought and paid for politician kind of guy. And like Bernie's kind of on the other side where he's like, people look at him and is like, well, you're not bought and paid for in necessarily the same way that these other politicians are when they're like in office. Like, I think that's the vibe. Now, I think there's some sliminess that he does with that. And I think he's kind of like fallen away from that, especially over the years. And he's like more and more fallen away from that. I think he's just kind of like, you know, he's kind of just kicking his feet up and going with the flow now a lot more.
But I think he's getting accustomed to the lifestyle.
I think there's a lot of that like, that's going on.
Well, they're all getting rich. I mean, I'd be an idiot not to myself. So, I mean, I can understand that, right? I can understand that. You get used to a particular lifestyle. He's probably looking at retiring from the Senate. You know, granted, he'll get a really nice pension. I don't know what the Senate pension is these days, but he'll be, you know, paid for basically for the rest of his life after this. But he's probably like, yeah, I'd like to keep my two houses. Maybe get a third, you know, Nantucket.
There's also kind of the aspect of, and you see that with like left-wing podcasters and things like that, and kind of like left-wing media personalities, where, you know, you're starting kind of at the bottom and you are just kind of a lower mill podcaster or whatever, but then you rise up and you get the mansion and well, like you're still complaining about the same things you were complaining about, but it's like now you're kind of disconnected from that thing. And it's like, you still believe this stuff, but like now you've kind of rose up in the capitalist system or whatever, and you're just kind of like,
that's why
now there's like a hypocrisy that exists there. That's just because you fulfilled the natural hierarchical role that's very natural in society. Well, you know,
and that's the thing that I can't, it is mostly the leftover from 2016, right, where you know, he got beat out by Hillary Clinton in such a nasty way. Right. Bernie Bros thing, coordinating with CNN, all that stuff that we found out about that, and he still endorsed her. Right. That's where I can see the respect for Ron Paul, because after all the bullshit that they pulled out the RNC to get McCain in, he said, you know, will you endorse him? He's like, no. No, we could do that.
Of course not.
Yeah, come on, get out of here.
There is
And he turned around and then went and campaigned for that. That same group and individuals who tried to ruin him. And that's like that. I can see the squealer in you, right? I can see the resentful,
the weakness thing.
Yeah, right. Here we
go. Betas.
I know.
Right.
The squealers when I see them.
Yep.
Yeah.
that's from Dark Knight. Yeah.
Okay.
I was gonna play it, but then I realized we're gonna get copyright struck because, you know.
Yeah. Just the audio.
Yeah. Corporate press sucks. All right.
Where did we go wrong? Was it always as bad as it is now?
Look, money, people with money always had power. But Citizens United Supreme Court decision opened the door in creating a very corrupt campaign finance system. And you said it all. Right now, in the Republican Party, Mr. Musk himself contributed $270 million to help elect Trump. And then he was given the opportunity to be the most powerful person in government for many, many months. Democratic billionaires play a very important role in selecting who the Democratic candidates are. And in a sense, through their money, kind of controlling what those candidates will stand for and what they will fight for. So the power of money right now, today, is extraordinary in both political parties. And if we're going to save American democracy, we've got to get rid of this. In my view, we've got to get rid of this campaign, this Citizens United Supreme Court decision. And you've got to move to public funding of elections. So in other words, if you want to run against me, I shouldn't be able to outraise you 10 to 1 or 50 to 1. I do that, I'm going to beat you every time. All right. You show that you have support. You deserve a certain amount of public funding. I will get the same amount of funding. Go for it. Your idea is better than mine. Then you win the election.
So who read the more money in 2016, Trump or Hillary Clinton?
Pretty sure it was Hillary by a very large margin.
Yeah.
Didn't Kamala make more money this year?
Raised and spent more money than Trump did.
Kamala spent $1 billion and ended up $20 million in the hole, as I recall.
Yeah.
Well, and she also started late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, is that counting the Biden numbers?
Yeah, it's counting the Biden.
That's counting numbers. Okay, because I was like, she was only in it for like 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, this reminds me of like, you know, those shows where it's like a game show and you have a cart and you got to run through a store and you got to get as much stuff into your cart as you can. You're sweeping shit off the shelves. That was Kamala's campaign in a nutshell.
Yep.
You know, only instead of getting stuff, she was just spending money.
Just throwing stuff just out.
Literally lighting it on fire.
It is gross how much money is just like that money could be getting invested into like useful things in the world, and instead it's just like ads ads for your political candidates. It is gross when you just like zoom out and think about it. You're just like, God, the sheer amount of money we spend on elections is insane, just like as a people.
It's even worse when you think that most of that money is given to them on behalf of rent sinking, of using government to guarantee your profits. That's why it's such a good investment. Because it gets you power.
Yes.
It gets you closer so that the powerful can then box out your competitors and get you a market advantage. That's why that money's spent that way. Because it's a good return. Nuts. And that's where I agree with Bernie. What I disagree with him is, one, money doesn't win you elections. And Trump is the example of that. And many other examples of that. Barack Obama was outspent by Hillary Clinton in that primary where he won. The question is when things are equal, what happens? Who has the advantage? Well, once again, it's Trump.
The incumbent.
Well, it's the incumbent, number one. Number two, because they have higher name recognition. Number two, it's whoever the media likes. If you want to empower the media to determine all of your elections and have an actual oligarchy made of the laptop class that shut down America and forced everyone to get the jab and all that shit that we hate from the corporate press, that's who you empower with this program.
Yeah.
Like, if you're like a populist, Bernie's this problem is the worst program for you possible.
It would have actually made Bernie's election worse.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like not, he was already fighting against the media, but if his only means of fighting was public funding, it was like, okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. But he's also like, what does that mean, public funding? Like, how much money should every candidate, who gets the public, like, can anybody just jump in and be like, I'll get public funding for my election now? Like, could I just go for it?
As long as
like,
you show that you that you have enough support, well, how do you get no-name candidates in?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's another challenge, right? You're going to have to appeal to the government to then give you money.
That's so
showing
often,
you have enough support.
That's so
that means only famous people will have the opportunity to get the support. Then you're screwed. So like this public financing idea is so bad on so many levels.
It just
like
doesn't make
the
sense.
Smallest amount of thought can pierce that bubble, but he's never been challenged on it that I've ever seen.
And that's my core problem with Bernie on everything. Like, like the socialism aspect, obviously I'm not a socialist, but like with the way that he presents his ideas, it's always these types of things where it's just like, you just say this thing and then you could just like one needle to that just pops the balloon completely. And it's exactly like that. It's just like, okay, explain how the public funding program for elections would work. Like, explain it to me like I'm five, because like, it doesn't make sense when the way that you're just saying it, like, how would this actually function? How would it work to get the outcomes that you're looking for right now? It doesn't make sense.
Yes. I mean, and then what it isn't guaranteeing is that the best person wins, right? It is guaranteeing that the person with the most coverage wins.
Yeah.
And that's obviously the flaw, right? Because that's how democracy works.
Well, now, that was the nice thing about Trump is that he got the most coverage and he just didn't have to pay for it.
Yeah. Mostly because it was hate coverage.
A bunch of podcasts.
Well, I'm talking 2016.
Well, yeah.
Like the sheer amount of money he spent on marketing was like zero.
Right.
But the sheer amount that the news talked about him compared to everybody else was like exponentially higher than everybody else.
So do you think in that sense it elevates the most extreme candidate because it gives them the most, you know, it gives the news outlet that's broadcasting them the most clickbait viral opportunity when they cover them?
Well, it's that, and it's also it gives the chance to set up the dynamic where the corporate press is attacking you, so you become the victim, so you garner sympathy. It galvanizes your base, especially when it's unfair, right? Sure. And you can go back to 2016 and think about all the unfair coverage, like him being Hitler and all that kind of stuff, or even like the worst moment, like the most, you know, what would have killed a lot of other candidates, like the what was it? The grab him by the yeah,
got him.
Meow.
Bernie had a moment like that in his campaign too. Remember the papers he wrote in college?
Oh yeah, yeah. His poetry.
Yeah.
Oh,
he had some real rapey poetry. Yeah. Yeah. We handed those out at one of.
I was trying to avoid the words. But.
Oh, sorry.
Grapey.
I said grapey. My bad.
Whitest we're screwed. Kids you know skit.
Sorry, YouTube.
Don't apologize to YouTube.
Is that kind of...
They probably donated to Bernie.
They probably did.
Alphabet Inc. is in there.
Yeah, you did say that. Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of go back to our last video? Like, I've heard so much about Mamdani, like, throughout this, the New York mayoral election, and it's all been negative. But he's leading.
Yes. So you're right.
He's got a very Trump effect. Yeah,
you're right. In the sense of if you're in that public campaign thing, you have to try to get as much media coverage as possible, even if it's negative. That might be that's a fair play. Other than that, it can, in the past, there's like this hanger-on thing that has killed candidates in the past, right? This is before the internet, though. So it's hard to say.
I do think that if Bernie was younger and more charismatic, he very likely could have won the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like too old for it.
Well, but superdelegates, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing is even...
I think that he could have bullied his way through more because he would have had that much more support.
Mm.
But like, he's kind of this, you know, kooky old guy kind of vibe. And those don't go like they only go so far as like people really like your ideas. Like Ron Paul's kind of the same way. Like if he was younger, he probably would have garnered more support, but like he's kind of got this kooky old guy vibe. But like people that like his ideas really like his ideas. So he gets like these like super fans, but like you need more than the super fans. Where in Bernie's kind of that same way, where he has like a lot of super fans, but he couldn't really go further than that because
I mean I think I see what you're saying, but I feel like it's more to do with the fact that he, and this is just my interpretation, that he feels to me like he's less controllable by the establishment because of that sort of kooky, unpredictable nature.
Maybe.
Like, he could wake up one morning and just have some fucking batshit idea and bring that to the table. And then because he's the president, like the Democratic powers that be like can't really like wrangle that, right?
And it's there kind could of the also Trump be, vibe. That's kind of what the Trump
idea well, true. And I mean, like that ways. Struck at the right moment in the right way for like the Republican base to be on board with that because, you know, he was so different from what they were accustomed to with the neocons that we had seen for the prior, you know, decade or more. And so I think that makes a lot of sense to me, but I feel like there's a component of it too, where it's like something to do with like the Overton window, but not as it's perceived by the public, but by how it's perceived by the ruling class elites, right? Mm-hmm. Like he has some ideas that are just too far outside of their talking points of their norm for them to sign on and say, yes, Bernie can be our guy because we can shepherd him in this way. I don't think he doesn't feel to me like he's as much a shepherdable candidate in that role.
I disagree. just going by his response to getting totally backstabbed in 2016 by his party. And then rolling over and just endorsing it.
Yeah, but I feel like to me that is something a little bit different. Like, it just feels a little bit different where it's like, you know, he realized he got beat and he was like, well, I kind of really like the role that I'm in, so I'm going to just like do what I have to do to keep my seat, to keep my seat at the table. But it, you know, would that power dynamic be different? Like, if he was in less of like sort of the cucked position of losing to Hillary via superdelegates and having to support her, if he won, would that dynamic, would his feeling about the situation be different? Say like, I won, I'm going to ram through my agenda and I'm going to do what I want. I don't know.
I don't think he has the energy. He doesn't have the vibe. Yeah. He doesn't have the strength. You know what I mean? He's great at like just talking shit, but he has nothing to back it up.
Is he just, I mean, you know, because Ron Paul was sort of like the idea guy, right? Mm-hmm. He was the flag stick in the ground that said like, this is where we should be, but he wasn't necessarily electable in the same
sense.
There
was a backbone to Ron Paul that Bernie doesn't have.
Oh, for sure.
And Trump couldn't agree more. And Trump very much has like a backbone too. Like, I think people are attracted to the backbone thing.
Bernie's the old man yelling at clouds.
He's
capitalist clouds.
That's exactly it. It's like Bernie's like yelling at the clouds, and then like the clouds like start raining, and he's like, okay,
yeah,
you know, like it's
wet. I'm gonna go inside.
It's that vibe where like I think that people want a certain like strength in their ideas. I also think that Bernie, at least for the powers that be, like zooming out and looking at the game board, I think kind of power makers and Machiavellians, they look at the game board and they see hyper ideologues like this as pieces that are very easily controllable, because you kind of know exactly what their vibe is and you can nudge them in the correct directions with certain talking points and kind of like almost get them to speak how you want them to speak based off of a certain ideological trend.
So then why would they have railroaded him if he was so controllable? Why would they have cut him out?
It's also the financial interests, right? The financial interest is a different base.
No, like, you don't want him to be president. You want him to be this annoying, loud man yelling at clouds that garners attention and then funnels people into your thing by like, and he's too weak to kind of stand up and fully capture that thing.
Sure.
Right. Like, he's such a useful tool, just like if you're just like zooming out and looking at the chessboard, he's like actually really useful.
Doing the podcast circuit and recruiting the, you know, liberal young men who see something in it.
Yeah. Like if I was like one of these like a game player that's like in intelligence, foreign or domestic or stuff like that, like I'd be looking at that as like a very useful asset to cultivate, like an unknowing asset, like legitimately a useful idiot, like in the Stalinist term, right? Like, ideologues oftentimes are looked at that way from like an intelligence point of view and from a game theory point of view. It's just like, you're a useful idiot because like I know exactly what you're going to do if I push the correct buttons. Like, that's like very useful from a game theory perspective. And Bernie just like embodies that.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And I think you see that like in the RFK hearings, right? Where he just goes to bat so hard for pharma companies when you're just like, what? Like, why?
Well, those are people who are most likely to benefit the most from universal healthcare.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Because they'll have a single negotiator to negotiate with. They won't have a competitive negotiation process. It'll just be Medicare. Right. Mm. So that those are the people, those are his clientele. Right, those are the people who rent seek the most off of his vision.
Interesting.
Right. Let's keep going.
Have campaigns based on ideas, not billionaires, but a huge amounts of money at ugly 30-second ads.
For the Supreme Court to reverse the Citizens United decision, in your estimation, what would have to happen?
Well, this Supreme Court ain't going to do it.
Right.
We're going to have to the congressional action. We could do it through Congress.
And how would you do it through Congress?
I'd do it through legislation, basically, which says that you outlaw super PACs, among other things. That's the first.
No, you couldn't. That's wrong. That's false. It's a Supreme Court decision based upon the First Amendment. You can't outlaw, with congressional code, a Supreme Court decision on the Constitution that would then just trigger a court case to relitigate Citizens United under a court that you know would not decide that. So either you don't know how the Constitution works and you are a senator, or you're just talking out your ass at this point, which is really unfortunate.
Both can be true.
I mean, just like that false hope is so like, ugh.
Who are the main opponents of this in Congress? If this were to come on the floor, I'm not asking you to call out names.
Well, I'll call out names. Mitch McConnell was one of the leaders in the effort.
Right.
As a Republican. But the big money interests love this.
Right.
Why wouldn't they? If you're a billionaire, you want to pick your candidate for president, hey, what's a few $100 million to you? It's a great, they love it. Money talks, and they like that process.
Is the Democratic Party, in your view, a bigger obstacle to your ideas becoming mainstream than the Republican Party?
No. Look, the Republican Party in the last 15 years under Trump has undergone a major transformation. It used to be kind of a conventional George W. Bush, a center-right party, right? That's what it was. It represented the wealthy, corporate interests, banks, etc. What Trump has done is really transformed that party. He won more working class votes than did Kamala Harris. And he has created in the Republican Party a right-wing extremist party. And also what worries me is not only their ideology, is this cult of the individual. You know what I'm talking about, much, Tim?
Explain it, but what I mean is I do.
The cult of the individual. Yeah, right?
Go on.
How dare he?
Look, it's one thing. You're a Republican, I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat, I'm a Democrat. We argue amongst ourselves. Your job is to represent your congressional district, your state, if you're in the Senate. Right now in the Republican Party, with very few exceptions, and there are some, they follow what Trump says and they are afraid to move in any different direction. I'll give you one example, a very clear example. A guy named Tom Tillis. That name mean anything to you?
Yeah.
Tom is a conservative, you know, senator from North Carolina. So the guy made the mistake of actually reading this big, beautiful bill that Trump brought forth. He concluded, he says, it's going to be a disaster for North Carolina. Hundreds of thousands of people are going to lose their health care. Healthcare premiums are going to soar. I can't vote for this. The next day, Trump was all over social media attacking this guy, and the billionaires were saying, we are going to spend unlimited amounts of money to defeat you in your primary. A day later, Mr. Tillis said, bye-bye, I'm out of here. I don't need this crap.
And he retired.
He retired.
Yeah.
Because he was going to face a very, very difficult primary. And that's what it is right now. You are a congressman. You kind of disagree with Trump on this. Are you really going to open your mouth and have Elon Musk saying, okay, we're going to primary you. My guy's going to get $50 million.
Right.
Now, this dynamic that he's citing to is only unique if you have TDS, right? This always seems like, I mean, if you've been tracking politics beyond the last, you know, 4 years or year, you would have the sense that, wait, every time there's a Democrat in the presidency and a Democrat Congress, the Congress follows that because that's how you coalition build to get legislation passed. I don't know what he expects exactly. You know, he supported much of the Obama agenda, despite him having actual principal disagreements with it, supposedly, right? He supported the Obamacare. It didn't go far enough, but he still supported it.
It's right? These are all just a bunch of words to say things are happening that I don't like. And then I'm going to put a bunch of words behind it to kind of like.
And then I'm going to yell at clouds.
And then it's a yelling at clouds phenomenon.
Steve Bannon.
It's like, yes, this is how politics has always worked. It's not anything that's different from any president before or anything like that. Like, this is how our system works. It's how like regular human psychology in politics works. Like, that's all normal. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like just like the arguing about oligarchy. The left has this thing where it's just like, we just don't like hierarchies. We want everybody to be like exactly even. Like there's no, like you should never have anybody that's like higher than another, or there should be no meritocracy that like makes you rise up the thing. Like when they're fighting against oligarchy, like it's kind of like their new Nazi kind of word. It's just a word. Like it's a magic word, right? But like, you know, like they're just fighting against this, like they're fighting against like nature, like they're fighting against human nature of like, these are how humans organize themselves is through like basic hierarchy, through meritocratic processes. Now we might be handling the meritocratic process wrong. And I think there's a lot of arguments that you could have for that, but just like arguing against oligarchy, it's like, what?
Well, so there's a difference between oligarchy, aristocracy, and these kind of words, right? And the way we use them, right? So Thomas Jefferson, you know, when Democrats have their little fundraising parties, they call them Jackson parties, right? We call them Lincoln-Reagan dinners on the Republican side. When they do that, they're invoking a guy who said, America needs a natural aristocracy. Yes. The argument has long been on the liberal side and of the tradition of liberalism, writ large classical liberalism, is that when you're in a state of freedom, people's best abilities can come forth and serve other people to garner reputation, merit, and ability. And when they do so, you create a natural aristocracy, groups of people who are naturally good at leading, step forth, and lead. And they're saying, well, why would Elon Musk be a natural aristocrat? Well, he produced trillions of dollars of value for people.
Yeah.
I mean, what have you done today? You know, like, I'm not saying that therefore you should worship that person or defer to that person. We all should be free Americans, individuals capable of rational self, you know, guidance and thought. But this idea that you can go free of any amount of hierarchy, especially merit-based hierarchy, is a stupid socialist pipe dream that we have to get rid of. It's so toxic and dangerous because their perspective of it is only taking the vice side of that. The there's there's kind of a yin yang value nature to how you orient to hierarchy. You can either orientate it to, it's like, hey, appreciation for what you've contributed and seeing that in its imperfection and its in what it is, for what it is. And then there's a side of it that is just jealous, right? And the side of that is just jealous, that only sees the negative, that can only see, oh man, I know you're actually making rocket travel possible with American-made rockets for the first time since, you know, the 80s or something like that. But you donated the wrong candidate, so therefore you're an evil person. You know what I mean? Like, that side only sees that as either the political or as the envy. And that's a tragedy. That's like encouraging vice writ large.
Michael Malice has a quote that he always says, there's like one solid way of knowing if somebody is a right winger or a left winger. It's, you ask them, do hierarchies exist? A right winger will say yes, and a left winger will give you a lecture. I think that's very, like, the right versus left paradigm is, do you believe hierarchies can or should exist? And then like the up versus down element is like, should it be like artificially made or not? Mm-hmm. Like that's really like what politics is.
The difference between natural aristocracy and an aristocracy or an oligarchy as classically understood was that there was a king who had a set of relationships who were made permanently wealthy based upon those relationships, or other families that were also wealthy that are brought into the kingship. These were dukes and jarls and stuff like that. Those arrangements were based upon coercion. Right, they are based upon taxation, and it's so ironic that the very party that wants us to maximize the state, make it as big and as powerful as possible to solve problems, also doesn't see that that very thing that they're creating is the thing that creates Citizens United and all the negative influence of money into politics. That's the thing that creates the actual bad kinds of aristocracy, meaning the kinds that get benefit simply because they are close to power, right? And so, When Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and I forget the guy from ChatGPT and OpenAI, Sam Altman, when they go and they're at the thing, I don't like that either, right? Because if they're getting special benefits from government, I'm not a big fan of that. But this is just the result of the thing that you created, progressives, right? If the government didn't have all this power to lend out favors to corporate to your beneficial organizations, to your beneficial meritocratic leaders in your industries that you prefer, we wouldn't be in this position. But here we are.
Yeah.
Right. And the only solution is the one solution that they won't support, which would be something that actually reduces the power of government. That's the real tragedy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, because I think they see the power vacuum. They're saying, if the government is smaller, then corporations will just run wild, and it'll be even worse than what we're currently seeing, right? Because the public sector is inherently good, and the private sector is inherently bad. And if you run a corporation, you are an evil, profit-seeking, you know, maniac, and you don't have people's best interest at heart. Your only interest is profit and shareholder value, and all these things that degrade society, right? Like that's sort of like to me, it seems like the caricature view that a lot of leftist progressives like Bernie Sanders have of the private side of things. Right. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's right. What they're missing is that it's how you make the state big that matters, right? You want a state sufficiently large enough, if you're not an anarchist, right? If you're in that position, or like, we got to handle some issues with the state, do you do it after when injury is done, or do you do it by regulating and managing everything? If you do everything by regulating and managing everything, you can create rent seekers. If you do everything by maximizing common law and maximizing the way in which people seek a redress of grievance after an injury, after a corporation stepped out of line, done something bad, and then you sue them, and then you create a precedent in which other corporations will then be worried about and then follow, then you're in a situation in which you can, you know, regulate corporations on actual injury without empowering the government to go rough wild with an executive branch that's really an administrative branch. They can't executive anything. They just administrate. They create reams and reams of paperwork so that they can have their own courts to privately prosecute companies that are out of line. Well, now you have one point of failure that no one can look to, that is completely unaccountable, not like a judge, not like anyone else, way more insulated than any judge could be. All you have to do is get that person to be an industry person, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, like they refuse to even engage with the problems in their own system because it is the status quo system. All right, so skipping ahead to immigration, he also had a little bit to say about that.
It's by AI or venture capital, which is his job. So my question is there a position that the Democratic Party can take that is obviously anti people getting dragged out of their houses, but recognizes that citizenship should mean something, mm-hmm. that we should have a border, mm-hmm. and that, you know, having laws that protect workers is important, and that people employing undocumented workers or illegal labor is driving down wages for Americans.
You've asked a lot of very important questions, good questions. Let's start off with the basic. So long as we have nation states, right, which we have, you gotta have borders, right?
Right.
If you don't have any borders, then you don't have a nation, right? In a sense. So has historically the United States done well under Democrats and Republicans in protecting the border? The answer is no. Trump did a better job. I don't like Trump, you know, but we should have a secure border. And it ain't that hard to do. Biden didn't do it. Those before him did not do it. We should have a secure border, period. I think most people in the Congress agree with that.
Why don't you think he did it? Just out of curiosity.
Pardon me?
Why don't you think Biden was more proactive with securing the border?
He did. He did some things. He was not. I think by the end of his term, if my memory is correct, the number of illegal folks coming in had gone down. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that overall it was a good job. It was not. All right. So that's point number one. You need a border. Let's have a border. And we have certainly the technology and the manpower to make that happen. Number two.
Can you pause there?
What happens? What is?
I'm remembering. I'm having these flashbacks come to me of that time period right now, where his partner in this tour that he's been doing for the book, AOC, was like sitting there crying for the poor refugees at the wall, right?
At the cages that Obama made,
kids in cages.
Yeah. Oh, also the kids in cages narrative. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just like flashing back to that moment.
Quite a shift in his rhetoric around this.
I am very surprised he's willing to. Because, like, when I think back on the Biden administration, there was so much stuff that's just like, we're just going to do the exact opposite of everything Trump said or is saying in this given moment on this thing right now. Doesn't matter what it is. We got to do the politically right thing and be the opposition to the evil Nazi Trump man. Right. And I'm just very surprised that he'd be like, Trump did better than Biden on that. I'm kind of surprised by that moment.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
That's more of a Bernie approach, right? He's much more likely to criticize both sides. I think that's why people like him.
I don't know. He was also one of those people who's like, his defense for coming behind Hillary Clinton is because Trump was just that evil.
Yeah.
Is that he was such an existential threat. So yes. I'm like kind of surprised to see that. Even in that moment, yeah. He would never do that.
It's crazy how he doesn't call on him on that. Like that Trump is just so uniquely evil.
Yes.
And yet he's doing better at the border.
Yeah. Is the appropriate response to, we think there are about 10 million undocumented people in the country today. Less than 3% of our population, okay?
Probably, there are estimates that are higher, but let's say it's 10.
Those are the best estimates I've seen, okay. Why did let's be clear, those people act, my father came to this country from Poland, came in legally, they came in illegally, period, okay? Yeah. It was illegal. What are most of those people doing right now? Are they?
Oh, working hard. Good. None of those people should be faulted for coming here.
Okay.
It should be, we should start faulting people like Steve Wynn, who run a billion-dollar hotel
on
illegal labor. And why aren't we enforcing E-Verify?
Good. Yeah. Good. All right. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so you got these folks who came to this country, the same reason my dad came to this country. He grew up poor in Poland, came for a better life. And that's why they dragged their kids, you know, from Mexico, Guatemala, thousands of miles, you know, to have a better life, to escape the violence and the poverty that they're in. They're here now. The truth of the matter is, and one of the things that I really, really dislike about Trump and what demagogues always do is this country, as we've discussed, has enormous problems. And what demagogues always do, instead of trying to deal with why we have those problems, what are the causes of the problem? What are the solutions? You blame a powerless minority. In Europe in the 30s, it was the Jews, it was gypsies. In this country, it was gays. It was blacks forever, you know, with Latinos. Always somebody to blame, rather than dealing with the real issue. So anyway, you got roughly 10 million people in this country, most of whom, by the way, work very hard. And according to a number of studies, the crime rate, you know, Trump goes around, you know, talking about, you know, somebody does, you know, commits a terrible, terrible murder. Trump is talking about all the lawless, you know, disgusting, subhuman human beings. Look at this crime. Yeah. Truth is that the crime rate in communities of undocumented people is lower than the general average. Do you know that?
Well, the crime rate should almost be none, right? If people are coming into America and they are, you know, coming here for a better life and they're properly screened, the crime rate should almost be nothing.
Well, it's lower. All I'm saying is this is not like, it's not like the criminals, everyone's a drug addict.
I don't think anyone thinks everyone is a criminal, and I don't think that anyone did, but we do have a ton of income inequality, as you've talked about. So assimilating people into this economic structure is difficult. It is inevitable that some people that cannot find work will turn to crime, and I mean, that's just inevitable.
Right, but my only point is this, this is not a community that is, you know, prone to large amounts of crime. All right, so what do we do? You got 10 million people here. Most of them are working hard. Your point, I think, is well taken.
Yeah.
A lot of employers exploit them.
Yeah.
And by the way, often these people are paying Social Security payroll tax, paying Medicare payroll tax, paying other taxes, and they don't get the benefits for what they pay, by the way.
Right.
All right.
But this has always been a Republican issue. Like, this is why I don't understand why the Democratic Party allowed the issue to be kind of demagogued. Because even, you know, yourself, you were out they're advocating always for workers' rights. Right. And, you know, when somebody talked about open borders, you rightly said that, you know, this is something the Koch brothers would love. Sorry. They were huge proponents of immigration. The Chamber of Commerce, huge proponents of immigration. A lot of, you know, radical libertarians like the Kochs and others, huge proponents of immigration. So when they're bringing all these people in, and whether it's 10 million or more, I mean, I think there are incredible estimates are a bit more, but I don't think it's necessarily about the exact number. But why were Americans told at a certain point that they should not consider certain blue collar jobs worthy of their time? They should take out student loans and you know, go to a 4-year university. And then a lot of those jobs that were, you know, ended up going to people that came into the country legally, and the employers are paying a lot less money. I think there's a lot of people that feel that these pro-business interests brought in a lot of people to increase the profits of their own companies at the expense of people that saw a lot of their jobs shipped overseas.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. I mean, one of the things, in my view.
Yeah, so a couple things there. Name a particular minority that takes the blame for everything that is actually not their fault, that Bernie Sanders is constantly harping on, makes his entire career about. I mean, first it was billionaires or millionaires, then it was 100 millionaires, now it's billionaires. But it's a small minority of people who he blames for all social ills, kind of regardless about their actual connection to those social ills. While he himself votes for every single spending bill that creates the inflation that actually leads to almost all of these social ills. That's the thing that drives me craziest about this, is that he could be so convinced of his own righteousness that he is so able to condemn, oh, well, he's just blaming this community for all this crime. When, to be fair, they make a crime happen when they cross the border illegally, by definition. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong, immigration is a complicated issue. We should have immigration, as Kyle said, as Kyle coined, somewhere between zero and infinity, right? What the right number is, we could debate, but somewhere in there. And
that's going to give me all this hate all of a sudden, because a lot of people apparently have a problem with that statement.
but the whole standard of like, oh, don't blame a minority for all social ills. If that's your standard, what are you doing, dude? Right? Elon Musk didn't create the problems in our cities that are actually driving all these problems. Government did. Elon Musk didn't create inflation. The Federal Reserve and your spending, sir, did. Like, what is happening?
Also, just to kind of double down on what you were saying about this minority of like billionaires and millionaires are just kind of annoyingly attacked. It's like there's several billionaires that you probably could attack, but like Elon, of all people, the dude just entered politics recently. And like, what has he done that has been like, what has he done specifically that is causing a bunch of problems from like the Bernie Sanders perspective?
Audit
like,
the federal government.
Yeah. That's the thing where it's like I can point to a few billionaires where like their rent seeking behavior and like certain things that they're doing, like where I'm like, ooh, I don't really like that. But like Elon, of all people, it's just like, he's not been that active. He's not been like just scooping up everything.
He was your boy 2 seconds ago when he was selling solar panels in electric cars. What are we doing here? Like, this is only politics.
Well, it's pure. That's exactly the point, is like the Elon one just like shows much more of your point of like,
yes,
we're just going to target a very specific victim. When it's just like, if billionaires is your victim class that you want to like target for stuff, is like, there are ones that kind of prove your point better than Elon does.
Oh, 100%. Right? Yeah. I mean, even talking about the hotel chains that employs all these illegal immigrants, if that's indeed true, okay, that's a bad thing. You know, go after them. You're not going to. Why? Because they're going to fund your campaigns and all those kind of disincentives, right? Obama was one of the biggest deporters. Tim Dillon wasn't talking about Obama dragging people out of their homes, although he was, because that's how you deport lots of people. He deported more people in his tenure than Trump has this year. So, like, this whole double standard thing is insane, and it's so frustrating.
And a lot of it is just media capture. Like, it's how the media presented to you on the thing is presented, and then your entire worldview on like who's doing the what on that issue is kind of dominated by that. Where it's like the kids in cages thing still dominates people's opinions on the Trump deportations, when it's just like, so provenly false, so like these things were, like you said, built by Obama, but like that has permeated throughout the American mind of like the evilness of the way that Republicans deport people, despite the numbers just being so much more like you said, Obama deported more people than Trump did in his first term.
Surely. Like, and when he's making the case, and we were kind of looking at that before, of how the Republican Party's kind of captured the working class energy and more of the populist energy that he wants to capture back. That was done mostly because Obama spat on and then stabbed in the back all of the Occupy Wall Street people and instead went to Silicon Valley and Wall Street and sold out. Sure. But he's not criticizing Obama for ruining the Democratic Party. He's criticizing Trump for doing the working class policy that he says he's always supported. As he attacks the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers, who don't run Walmart, who run an engineering company. They're not hiring illegal immigrants to be engineers. Are you insane? Like, God, it's so dumb. Like, the way they vilify the Koch brothers, and I have no reason to defend them. Former employers, so full disclosure, but I can criticize them too. But it's just so stupid because they're not hiring illegal immigrants to... Maybe they are to the degree that anyone's hiring them for like a janitor position or something like that. But this isn't the hotel chain. Mm-hmm. This is people who are saying, hey, how do we solve immigration? With the exact same thing you just said, Bernie. The exact same thing you just said. What do we do with all the people here? What's the most compassionate thing we can do with that? And then we want a strong border. Like the Koch brothers are never in favor of open borders in the sense of illegal immigration being maximized. It was how to make coming here more efficient, you know, and running economic studies about that. Them doing this boogeyman thing is just as stupid as saying all immigrants are murderers, right? That's not true.
Yeah. They're not sending their best.
Not sending their best.
Okay. So yeah, he also got into the greatest question of our time, the trans question.
Most people in America don't want prepubescent children on puberty blocking hormones. And this is by the polls, right? Because they feel that kids are kids, mm-hmm. they're young, they don't quite know what's going on yet. Mm-hmm. And to make an irreversible medical decision at that age, if you're encouraged to do so, that to a lot of people feels like an infringement on their rights as parents. And to me, I feel like it's one of the issues that the Democratic Party has seemed to have lost their way on, because it has sucked the oxygen out of a lot of the conversations that you want to have, which are good conversations about a woman's right to choose and gay rights and trans rights and all of these good things that should exist. But when you have this issue about puberty blocking hormones for children, it's such a controversial issue for so many people.
The answer is yes, you're right.
Okay.
But the answer is, and it is important, and I think Democrats and perhaps myself have not done as good a job this weekend in dealing with it. What percentage of the population is trans, do you think?
Probably 1%.
Maybe at most.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Today, 60,000 people every single year die because they can't get medical care. 60,000.
Yeah.
All right. Today, we've got 800,000 people who are homeless. Today, right. We're dealing with a climate crisis that could wreak havoc over the years on our country. So I think you're right in saying, I think you're right, that the Democrats have allowed the Republicans to exploit those issues by not dealing with them effectively.
Well, they've also just refused to compromise. I mean, these are unpopular issues.
Fair enough.
Biological men and women's sports is just an unpopular issue. Right. You know, child sex changes, no one wants this. Very few people, very radical people. And I understand that people have trans children, and I get it. But, you know, this has tremendously hurt the electability of Democrats.
But I think the answer is yes. But the answer also is, why are we talking... Are we not talking about some of the issues that I raised earlier? Why are we not talking about the fact that we are the only major country on earth not to guarantee healthcare to all people?
Because
we don't have to listen to more. He's doing a pivot on everything.
But look at the cowardice there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, he's like, I'm the different guy. And they're like, be different. And he's like, oh, well, but what about...
That's no spine. Old talking points.
That is no spine. That is, I have nothing but the talking points I'm here to talk about, and that's it.
Yeah.
Buy my book.
Trans all the kids, you know, he says Democrats didn't deal with it very well. How should they have dealt with it?
Well, we have issues like climate change. that's the thing. It's like, well, what we need is Medicare for all. Like, it's like you're not answering the exact question, which is kind of the problem, is that the reason why the Democratic Party is losing the culture and has lost the culture almost completely at this point is because they were willing to let this like small minority just like run rampant and just go on through this like cancellation rampage for a decade and like preaching to people about what they're supposed to believe and like what they're, you know, like it's just kind of like you have to believe this. Like it's like a Bible thumping of trans ideology, right? Mm-hmm. And then people like Bernie, who probably don't really care about the issue, really just kind of sat there and would be like, well, this is a good opportunity for me to talk about Medicare for all, I guess, you know, like, but they're not contending with the issue that everybody is kind of seeing in front of their eyes. And we're like being forced. Like, I didn't want to have to care about trans issues, but we were like forced to have to do it because that's all the culture cared about for so long.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, I wouldn't even say it's the culture. I would say it was an amplification through the media. Right. I mean, I don't think the majority of the culture ever really wanted to care about those issues. Of course, not like marginalize people or treat them differently or whatever, to like live your life. Of course. I mean, as libertarians, I think we all agree on that, but not an issue that everyone needs to be involved in so long as everyone's like allowed to be who they are. But the kids thing makes it a little different.
Exactly. That's what it was.
Yes.
Is elite opinion makers who drive the culture decided it was important because they live in tiny bubbles of being cat ladies who just write on laptops all day, and that's what they do.
The laptop class strikes again.
It's a very narrow, compassion-orientated culture that doesn't care about a lot of the values that the rest of the culture does. And so by elevating the victim status of these young people and the mothers and the fathers who saw their children be victimized by this social contagion, Republicans were able to capture the culture. And he can't reconcile with that. He has no clue how to actually drive the Democrats made mistakes. What were the mistakes? Like, what is your position on this now, Bernie?
Explain to me how that's the millionaires and billionaires' faults, Bernie.
Exactly. Thing, right? Exactly.
Like not everything fits into this box that you're formulating here. Like,
I mean, let me just point this out. How many trans people are billionaires?
Not a lot.
Yeah. So therefore, maybe transing the kids means fewer billionaires in the world. Maybe Bernie is pro transing the kids because it's fighting the oligarchy in a roundabout kind of way.
It's sort of an antinatalism argument, kind of.
Yep.
Sterilize so. Them, then I'm we not, depopulate.
Like, I'm not saying it, but people are saying it.
I wouldn't say it. I heard someone say it.
Yeah.
Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
So yeah, that's a scattering of the interview. That's pretty much how it went the whole time. Overall, you know, Tim Dillon was funny. Bernie Sanders was Bernie Sanders. That's the vibe.
It is one of those things where he's like this relic that hasn't adapted in any way. Mm. Like he's a relic of 2015 and 2016, and. Like, I would be curious of what people's opinions of Bernie are now. Because, like, is there opinion polling that exists? Probably on it. Because it's just, he hasn't done anything. Like, he hasn't evolved. He's just stayed kind of himself, but become even more milquetoast. Yeah. It's kind of curious.
Is he still relevant?
He goes on podcast tours like this. Like, do people want to listen to Bernie talk on podcasts? Like, he just doesn't feel relevant anymore in some ways. But,
right.
Like,
is it popular? Let's see here.
300.
What am I missing? Where's the views, right?
380,000 views.
And that's just on his YouTube.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Tim Dillon.
Yeah, what's his average here? Looking 300. It didn't even
almost
perform
a million.
That well.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Three quarters, 1.4.
It's greatly underperforming. It's like normal. Yeah,
it's only one. Yeah, it's only one day ago. Yeah,
it's only been one day.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, it's kind of.
Makes you wonder. I mean, we just did a podcast about Mom Donnie, who seems to be sort of the future of the Democratic Party in a certain way. Is Bernie still relevant? I mean, his ideas, the ideas that he espouses theoretically seem to be, mm-hmm. but it seems like the messenger's not right anymore.
Yeah. Is it something like an analogy to maybe fit it into our existing mental models that Ron Paul was the Tea Party movement that created Trump, that Bernie Sanders was the Bernie Bros that created Mamdani.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. Something like that.
Maybe. Yeah. Cause like Mamdani is kind of an echo of Bernie Sanders, at least from a policy perspective in a lot of ways.
But it's also like the outside, you know, I'm coming from the social Democrats. I'm not coming in, you know, like his background.
AOC also kind of fits that mold too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, those are kind of the downstream effects that come from Bernie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It still feels like it misses the pulse.
Does
of what's going on in the country.
Yeah, he's talking to a pulse that is a decade old, like that's from a decade ago. Mm. And he's not contending with the current vibes that are going on right now, yeah. It feels like.
I think the folks that are giving him time are the folks that liked him back in the day.
Actually, yeah. Right?
And more so than like, oh, this is the moment. Like, this is where it's going big for him, for their audience or something like that.
Yeah, it's one of those things like Bernie Sanders shows up at your door is like, okay, I'll interview you.
Yeah, right. And I wouldn't blame him for that. I'd interview
Bernie Sanders. Legacy tour.
It's the legacy tour. Yeah.
It's the band 50 years later. You're like, well, I liked him back then. Don't have all the heat they used to have, but yeah. Nostalgia.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys. That was fun.
Absolutely. And thank you for watching. Let us know what you thought of this interview, Bernie Sanders and Tim Dillon. Do you support Bernie Sanders? Do you like his ideas? Do you hate him? Let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Also, we have a Discord server in the description below. Join us for the conversation after the show and let us know what you'd like for us to talk about next. For David Rand, for Kyle Mack, for Bennett, I'm Joe Sheehan. Human Reaction. We'll see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
Bernie's the old man yelling at clouds.
Like,
he's
yes.
He's grandpa.
Capitalist clouds! Yeah.